WrestleMania 3 at the Silver Dome in Pontiac, Michigan. It's a day that I'm certain my guest at this time will not forget. I'm talking about the former Intercontinental Champion of the World, Macho Man Randy
Savage. Nothing means nothing.
Nothing means nothing, man.
Nothing means nothing. What do you mean by that?
War, I'm talking about all the way to the top, yeah. Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in. But the cream will rise to the top, oh yeah. Macho Madness, yeah, has got more to offer than President Jack Tunney thinks that I got. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something right now. Cards stacked against the Macho Man Randy Savage in WrestleMania 3. Yeah, let me say it, yeah. Let me say it out loud, and let me point to the president of the World Wrestling Federation. The Macho Man Randy Savage is not happy with your decision, yeah.
All radio is dead. All radio is
Wednesday, October the 28th. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. There's a lot of plugs in the beginning of this, and since I started off with a promo by the late Macho Man Randy Savage, I feel like I can just hear my listeners turning off their podcast players right now, which may or may not be the case, and hopefully it's not the case. But if you hated all that stuff, then so be it. I wanted to first make sure that I thank the patrons of the podcast for contributing some kind of a monetary donation to the podcast. You show up every single month, and I just can't thank you enough. If you are interested, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. But let me give a shout out to Matt, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jenna, Nate, Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Alyssa. Now Ross, who I mentioned a second ago, Ross just won a best in show motorcycle won a best in show award a few days ago. So big shout out to Ross. That's awesome. So Casey and Alyssa, Brian, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim, thank you all so much. And again, if you're interested, just go to patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. Now, the other two plugs, and I'm going to get through these as quick as I can. So Jim Prusak, who you've heard on the podcast before, has started doing a weekly webinar series, and it's called Simply Sarno. You can actually find more information about this on my Facebook group, the Mind and Fitness Podcast, Deleters of Pain, but he's got a link to it. And so this Thursday, I will be appearing. It's a $15 fee for the webinar. That's what all of their webinars cost, so there is an entry fee associated. I'll be talking. So I'll be at 5:30 p.m. Pacific this Thursday coming up, which is October the 29th. So would love to see you there. And I think it'd be awesome if you were a part of it. The other thing that I want to plug is Dr. Dan Ratner has been on the podcast before. And he has brought his wisdom actually a couple of times. And one thing that he had told me was that he was going to be starting a podcast as well. And so his podcast is called Crushing Doubt, and you can actually find it on his YouTube channel. Let me see if I can get the date that this is going to air. There's going to be an episode where I was on his show. Let me get you the date. So it's coming up on October the 28th, which means as you are listening to this, oh, it's out today. How about that? It will be the episode where Dan interviews me. And if you can't get to YouTube or can't find the podcast as it airs today, I'm going to be replaying it next week, so you'll be able to hear it that way. Okay, done with all the plugs. Thanks so much for sticking around for that. So today's podcast it's awesome, and I think that it's awesome because there are different types of professions of people that I've interviewed before, and the arts is such a pivotal piece of recovery. Steve Rosanich talks about it a lot in his book, The Arts, and the culinary arts is a component of that. So we are going to go across the water, across the Atlantic Ocean, to listen to Lindsay Roberts tell her story of recovery, tell her story of TMS, and ultimately how she changed the whole, the whole direction of her life. By partaking in her own recovery. And so she really owns it. And I think this interview is awesome. And it's very unique, and it's something that you haven't heard before, of course. So without further ado, here is Lindsay Roberts.
This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. One of my favorite places to go for interviews is across the pond. There's a lot of listeners in the United Kingdom, in England. And that's where today's guest joins me from London. Lindsay Roberts is on the line. Lindsay, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Now, you somehow made it 6,000 miles from California, where you're from, all the way to London, and I'm a California native as well, so I'm curious, what part of California are you from, and what made you go all the way across the world, and when did you do it?
Yeah, well, I was born and partially raised in Sonoma County, which is about an hour north of San Francisco, and that's where I spent my childhood, and then I finished growing up in Ventura County, and then moved back to Sonoma County for my university and my adult life, and that's where I was until 2014. And I moved around the Bay Area a bit, but in 2014, that is when I had a transformative experience where I finally was able to get rid of 23 years of chronic migraine. And I kind of wrote a list of my dreams and what, you know, what I'd been kind of waiting on doing. And one of those dreams was to, I was involved in food education in the Bay Area and absolutely loved it. But a dream of mine was to get a master's and study gastronomy in Italy. So I went to Italy and earned my master's 2014-2015. And following my master's, I came to London, England for an internship with Jamie Oliver. And I met my now husband on a blind date, and we hit it off instantly. And who would have ever guessed? I thought I was in London very temporarily, and we hit it off really well and ended up deciding to get married. And then it was a matter of deciding which continent to live on. And my husband's not from London either. He is from Turkey. So we both met in this metropolis, and it just made sense. That was, you know, almost five years ago. Well, yeah, 5 years ago this August is when we met, and made sense for me to officially move here. It's a long story made short.
It reads like a Disney movie, the way that you explain it that way. That's so wild. As you're telling more and more of that, which by the way, the people that listen to this, my whole goal, and I told Lindsay right when we got on the line, I want very little background before we start taping, because I think it's so cool to get some of the story. And I started smiling even bigger as you're talking about sort of that story of, hey, I got rid of 23 years of this thing, and then it got me to this, you know, to this other part of the world. And then I met my husband on a blind date. My husband is not from, like, it's crazy. It's right out of a movie. Kudos to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it really did feel like that. And, you know, a lot of my friends and family said you're kind of like doing eat, pray, love. You know, you went, because prior to that, I had gone to India twice and then Italy. And Ireland is where I did spend a summer at a cooking school in 2008 that also changed the trajectory of my life. And so I'm just missing out on Bali from the book. But. Yeah.
And you on your, so on your website, which is mindbodykitchens.com, which we're, yes, gonna, I'm sure we're gonna get into that stuff a little bit later on. But you had said that you left K-12 education. So talk about you as a teacher, not a culinary teacher, but a school age teacher. Talk about that.
Yeah. And do you mean, should I also talk about how I manage with my headaches?
We'll get into that. Okay. Both my parents are teachers. And so that was the environment that I grew up in. And I'm from Butte County, which is, it's like 3 hours away from where you grew up. So I don't know if you have any knowledge of Chico, but the way that it's famous now is the Paradise Fires and stuff like that, which was not, I mean, there were some houses that I probably either frequented or rode my bike by that probably are not there anymore due to wildfires. And so that's kind of how they're a little bit more on the map at this moment.
Yes.
But I'm just sort of curious what drove you to go into K-12 education in the beginning.
Well, I think each year in school, as I was growing up, I always thought this is my favorite grade. I want to teach this grade, but previously, I think the idea of being a teacher was kind of implanted in my head by my mom, because she had always wanted to be a teacher and hadn't at that. She hasn't since graduated from university and become a teacher in her older age. But growing up, she'd always wanted to be a teacher. So I think the idea kind of came from my mom. And I always remember really enjoying each grade level, you know, and I loved learning. So I went to university and thought I wanted to be a teacher, and kind of dabbled in like some education classes for undergrads and, you know, where you volunteered in schools kind of thing. And I wasn't 100% certain. So like I challenged myself to pass the teaching exams that you would need to pass after 4 years of university to get into the credential program. I know the credential program in California has now changed a bit, where it's more integrated, but in your undergrad. But I decided, if I can't pass this test, I'm not meant to be a teacher.
Yeah.
So I'm the kind of person that didn't study, just showed up, passed the test, and I was like, okay, well, that wasn't too bad. And and I passed the exams required, and then got into the credential program. And at the time, I considered for being a high school history teacher, because my undergraduate degree was in history. And then I thought about early childhood education. And then I settled on elementary, and the majority of my time was spent in fifth grade. And I really liked the fifth grade curriculum. It was just a fun curriculum for me to teach. And, you know, that curriculum is really kind of what helped develop as an adult my love for science, my love for nutrition, my love for math, and really all the social studies. Really, it just really, because you have to become a curriculum expert in the topics that you're teaching.
Yeah.
So you always had to be a few steps ahead of the children. And so yeah, I really did enjoy it. But you know, in 2008, I should also say, I always really tried to focus on like food and nutrition during my regular teaching. You know, if we were studying, you know, wagon trains heading west, you know, I would have the kids make biscuits and jam. And, you know, so I was always trying to do fun things like that. Yeah. And I had grown up with like a love of cooking. So I knew that was something I really enjoyed, but there wasn't enough of that in my daily teaching experience
right.
at the time.
Right. So, the reason that the majority of people that are listening are here, so let's get into the migraine thing. You know, it's something yeah. where, I don't see, maybe it's because I'm not, I fast forward through so many commercials, but I feel like there was a period of time, in the not so distant past, where the talk of like migraine medicine, if you have more than this, you know, this many migraines, a month, then it qualifies as somebody that has them chronically and come and get these pills and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
and it is, one of the more, common diagnoses and one of the more common things that. It's interesting because I hear people in my circle, not necessarily my inner circle, but my circle, talk about and say that they have, but there's not. So it's just sort of like, it's, you know, it's here and it's a thing. And, you know, they try light therapy and they try just taking a bunch of Advil and they try a variety of things and they attribute it to mold and they attribute it to a variety of things. But at the end, you still have this thing. And so you had them for mm-hmm. over two decades, which is wild. Mm-hmm. So when did all that stuff start? How old were you?
Yeah. Well, I had my first like bad headaches that wouldn't go away in fifth grade. And I attributed it to some hairspray that I was using and the scent. I was allergic to the scent. And I stopped using that and then was fine. And then in the end of sixth grade, I started, I was 12, about to turn 13, and I started having horrible migraine headaches that didn't go away. It's just like I woke up one morning and they got progressively worse each day. And, you know, migraines, that was, I think, about 1992.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just went to the pediatrician and they kind of just said, take some Advil, or just, you know, they didn't understand like the severity of what I was going through. And there really weren't the medications at that time, you know, the amitriptylines and Imitrexes and all of those medications that are just handed out like candy right now. So they didn't really know what to do, you know, and at that point we'd also moved from Northern California to Southern California, and was sent for an MRI to rule out, you know, it being a brain tumor. Yeah. And pretty much from about the age of 13 till, you know, 34, spent most of my time in neurologist offices, you know, getting tests here and there, and being given some scares too, like, oh, you could have MS, but obviously it turns out to not be that case. And just being given various prescription medicines. I tried Botox. I was sent to the chronic pain department through my medical insurance. I was kind of in the whole Western medicine model for the bulk of that time.
So it's interesting. So you said from 18 to 34, you were, this is
from 13
to 24 or to 34. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what comes to mind for me now is, you know, because normally, like, at least in Sarno's books, he talks about a lot of this stuff beginning at age 30 and going until age 60 for a lot of people, because those are these, ages of responsibility. What I think about when you say 13 to 34 is that the age of responsibility may have come much earlier for you, but that may not be the case. And so looking back, I mean, was it something that was going on around age 13 that maybe led to this, to some of this stuff? Or I guess what's sort of your hypothesis now at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the hypothesis is constantly evolving and you're constantly learning through this whole healing journey.
Yep.
I now know more than I did, you know, back when I was 34, when I kind of did a lot of somatic experiencing and was able to come through, get over the pain. But I'm going to start back. I learned more recently in the past year that I believe, well, I had a very traumatic birth, which I didn't realize the effect on me until more recently. I was born 6.5 weeks early. They used forceps on a very small baby. They damaged one of my cervical vertebrae. And I do have, you know, like Sarno speaks about in his books, you know, you have that bulging disc, or so you have a actual abnormality, but that doesn't necessarily mean it is causing a pain.
Yeah.
You know, you can live just fine. So from 0 to 13, I don't believe I had any neck pain or headaches, you know, on a regular basis. I had to do a lot of healing more recently about my birth. I also realized I was in like NICU for 12 days. I wasn't held till I was 10 days old. You know, a lot of the things that happened in 1979, they now wouldn't necessarily do to a newborn. Now they do like the skin to skin, and they understand the vital need for the baby to feel the mother's heartbeat and things like that. So they didn't know that then. So it was really traumatic for me. And I had a near-death experience. I don't know the exact date. I have to ask my mom, but probably like 5 or 6 days in, where I almost died and my parents were called and in the middle of the night and told that I probably wasn't going to make it.
Wow.
And I made a turnaround. And so there was that. And then, you know, in the whole healing process, I was able to, you know, take a good look at my life and start listing all the traumas. And any traumas you have from 0 to 5 or 0 to 7 before you're very verbal and your brain's more developed can be quite lasting and get stuck in the body. So like when I was 3, I had a fever seizure, and I had a spinal tap done to me at the hospital. You know, it was an emergency situation, and like they didn't let my parents in the room. And I didn't also realize the effect of that on me till I was sitting in the chronic pain office at my medical insurance with a psychologist, and he briefly had me do a little like meditation. And we talked about that, and I suddenly had a bunch of pain in my lower spine. And I didn't realize that that was, you know, still held in my body, you know, so I was able to release that. And when I was really young, that was a reoccurring nightmare, but I didn't realize that it was that experience until I was, you know, around 33, 34, you know, so there's so much that happens. And when you're a kid that you just move on from, but you don't realize that it's still being held. So moving on to age 13, you know, it's a really can be stressful time with puberty, with, you know, we were moving to a new school from Northern California to Southern California. My parents' marriage was kind of rocky, so there was definitely fear, like, are they divorcing? Are they not? And being the eldest in my family, I took on a lot of those like adult responsibilities, even though they weren't required. You know, they just. And I'm not saying my family was perfect. They weren't always the healthiest, but there was definitely like no physical abuse or anything like that. But yeah, so I took on some of those traits of more so a parent might at 13. So I felt very responsible for myself, for my siblings, for my parents. And I think that that created a lot of stress for me.
Do you feel like, because... And maybe you sort of implied this, but maybe you haven't. It's tough to tell.
Sure.
But, did you find yourself, like, do you think you were like a worrier as a kid? Not a warrior, but a worrier as a little kid?
Yeah. And it's funny because like when my headache started, my paternal grandma said, oh, Lindsay, you're just a worrywart. And that really bothered me because I just thought this... my grandma doesn't realize like how much I'm suffering, you know, like, so, you know, in those earlier years, I wouldn't necessarily have identified it, but maybe had a doctor really delved in and asked me questions, maybe they would have figured that out. Obviously now, you know, that's like a form of anxiety, really.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I've since grown and realized that and healed a lot of that stuff, but yeah, I definitely think so.
So you go through this long period of time. And the thing is, like for me, as an example, the amount of time to which I had really severe symptoms that I couldn't really ignore, like you went through a very long time, you know, 23 years of symptoms that you could not ignore. Mine were nowhere mm-hmm. near that. But a lot of that kind of seems like a blur too. Like that period of time that I had, now looking back, though it was very long and it felt astronomically long. Now, when I look back, it sort of just feels like a little blip on the radar. But for you, you know, we're talking about a massive chunk of your life. So when you look back mm-hmm. now, does that 23 years seem like a blip on the radar, or does it seem like, man, that was still a huge part of? Because the thing that I feel like maybe a lot of people would have trouble with is being able to reconcile that this such a massive piece of your life was, you know, quote unquote, you know, wasted or mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. And I don't know if you even feel that way, but that's something that's coming to mind as you're talking. 100%.
I mean, I think that's part of what prevented me from healing too, being so really pissed off and mad at myself, at the world, how unfair. Like, you know, my sister, who was like my Irish twin, you know, 13 months younger, I felt like she got to live the dream life, you know, and have fun and be a teenager and do this and that. And I was the one like lying on the bed, you know, feeling like I was in so much pain and maybe not going to the parties or going and leaving early because I felt sick kind of thing. So I definitely feel like I had this kind of victim poor me mentality and it's not fair. And I do feel like I missed out on a lot of life. But also, as the headaches got a bit better, you know, they started becoming less. I started telling myself, like, I'm still going to go do this thing, even though I feel horrible. I'm not going to, you know, miss the football game or miss this event. I'm just going to go, you know, even if I feel horrible.
Yeah.
I can always leave early. And I learned sometimes I did feel a lot worse. And sometimes actually by going and socializing or doing something I really wanted to do, I would actually start to feel better.
And that's interesting. So now, and you know, we're playing Monday morning quarterback by asking this, but what is it about that you would go out and do things and you would feel better? What do you think was going on?
Well, I just want to say one more thing, what we were just talking about. I feel like even though I missed out on a lot of my life, that journey was because that was my story to tell and to share with the world. Like, I had to go through that hell so that I can in turn help other people.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, Eddie, can you please repeat the question?
That's okay. So you mentioned a minute ago that you would find that when you would go out and be doing other things, preoccupied with other things, that the pain wouldn't really be there. And so now looking back all these years later, what do you think was going on with that specific thing?
I think so much, you know, obviously depends on the experience, but I think a huge part of healing is kind of coming into a knowing with your intuition and really understanding what you need. There's self-love in there, for sure. And so really loving yourself and really understanding what your body's telling you, and experiencing joy and happiness and having fun. Like, this is what life is about. So when you deny yourself those experiences, you're just going to feel crappy, you know? So I think, I mean, like, I was teaching school many, many days with a level 10 migraine, like the worst of the worst. Because I would have been unemployed had I actually taken off the days that I needed to.
Yeah.
So I just started, really just, you know, doing things that were interesting to me, and also learning what I didn't want to do, because that would often make the headache worse. You know, if I did, force myself to go to this training or this or that and didn't actually want to be there, that would make the headaches worse. So, I think part of healing is really just, tapping into your intuition and what do you really need in this very moment? And sometimes it actually is just staying at home on the couch, and that's fine.
There's something that you said there that I think is so, it seems so small, but to me, I have this inner phrase when, because it just as you describe, if there are certain things that are coming up that I don't want to do, but I'm doing, you know, because maybe I feel like I have to, or I need to, or I want, you know, but I don't want to, my body does react, and it reacts in a very specific way. And, you know, back in the day, several years ago, when that would occur, it was just like, oh, here comes all this pain again. But now I literally have this phrase where, let's say thing comes up that I have to do, and I start to do it, and my body starts to hurt or whatever. The phrase I say in my head is, well, this is a bunch of bullshit. And I can almost laugh about it because it's so stupid, but it's very subtle. So your body is telling you literally, like, well, this isn't something that I want to do. And I think it's also really neat that, you know, you point out that maybe it is just sit on the couch and, you know, watch Netflix or whatever, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that the pain teaches you, and maybe something that our society has gotten away from, is really being in tune with your body and its signals and what it's telling you. I'd like to think that children today are learning these things, but these things certainly weren't taught to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn them all as an adult, and I've learned so much in the last, you know, 10, 12 years, about how to heal myself. And yeah, all these cues are there, but you're not necessarily awake and aware.
One thing I'm curious about, as you kind of go through this journey, this, you know, 23-year odyssey, is that I feel like, and at least it was the case for me, and I think it's the case for a lot of people, is that in the beginning, when symptoms really start, and for you, you were so young that naturally, you know, you tell your parents, I have these terrible headaches, they take you to a you know, regular doctor. But I feel like the further that you get removed from the initial onset, the more out of the box type of healing you go after. So you might, you know, then you start going to do Reiki, then you start going to do acupuncture, then you start to go do Rolfing, then you go start. So there then becomes a lot of these alternative modalities that are far away from a Western medical model, because I don't know if it's desperation is the right word, but willing to try a lot of different things. Did you get to a period of time like that where you felt like you were trying a lot of things that were out of the box that also were not working?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I probably spent of my own money as a working adult at least $100,000 on various treatments, at least, in addition to what I was already paying with medical insurance and, you know, co-pays for alternative whatever, you know. I even went to India. One of my trips there was to work with an Ayurvedic doctor who specialized in migraines. I want to go back, though, to when I was a teen. I realized, you know, you kind of go on this trajectory and you're trying everything. And when I was a teenager, when my headaches first started getting better, was because I made the connection that I was allergic to corn syrup. And corn syrup in the 1990s, and it's still in a lot of things in the United States. And then it turned out to be all corn. So I, in my teen years, you know, before I had to learn how to read nutrition labels and learn how to cook. And that's why that's kind of, that was, you know, the start of my passion and what I do now. Because initially I felt like food healed me because I was connecting to my body and listening to what it needed. And I stopped eating all those processed foods and really paying attention to what I was putting in my body. So that initial hurdle was huge. And I went from a migraine every day to a couple times a week. You know, after 5 years, I basically had a migraine every single day for 5 years that I couldn't get rid of, and no doctor could really help. No medication helped.
My God.
And it was when I changed my diet that I saw a significant reduction. The doctors couldn't believe it. They didn't understand it. I still don't even test positive for an allergy test for corn, but I know if I eat it, I'll have a reaction. Could I do more personal healing to get over the corn allergy or intolerance is probably the right term? Yes, but I'm not interested in that because I feel like my personal belief is eating a whole foods, you know, seasonal, fresh, mostly organic diet is good for my body, good for the earth. And I feel like this is going off on a slight tangent, but I think part of the healing process for myself is really, and, you know, doing my master's in Italy in gastronomy came full circle, realizing that there's this interconnectedness with us and the universe and our food systems, and we're all connected. And by being connected in a positive way, we're supporting one another, you know? So there's that. And then I'll tell you more about my crazy, you know, experience of, you know, what I tried and whatnot.
So there's something that you said there about the corn, which I think is interesting. There's going to be some people that are going to listen to this and they're going to say, this is supposed to be a mind body healing thing. And you can ignore, you know, the issues that you may have with different foods and how they impact mm-hmm. you or don't impact you. And so this is BS and this doesn't tie into what Eddie usually talks about. However, I had developed a relatively serious isn't the right word, but a really bad reaction to dairy products, and it happened overnight. And so I went several years without even touching it. And then, you know, I got through the TMS work and sort of understood kind of the mechanism behind fear and a lot of that things and how it impacts really the physiology. Went back to having dairy, had dairy for a long while, didn't have adverse symptoms. The one thing that I did find, though, is that because I'm a strength athlete, and so I do a lot of Olympic weightlifting, I do some powerlifting, and I dabble in some CrossFit stuff, I would find that my recovery wasn't quite as good with having dairy products. And I would also find that I didn't feel like I was as mobile or as athletic or as agile when I would have some dairy products. And so I would leave it alone for a few days, and I would start to feel you know, quicker, stronger, faster, better recovered, all that kind of stuff. And so that's why I choose to not have dairy products anymore, because of the way that I feel like it impacts that element of me. You know, it's not a fear of it. That, like, that fear portion is gone. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree to you. There's a huge fear that develops when you're questioning everything in your diet, literally every bite, you know? And, so yeah, I think part of the whole healing experience is you can reintroduce all those foods and really do it, you know, without fear and really supporting your body. which could be something as simple as, what am I trying to say? Like, one thing I do, and I don't think it matters on your faith, but I think before you eat your meal, you can, you know, give thanks and ask the food to nourish and strengthen your body and tell yourself that it's safe to eat.
Yeah.
And also to connect that food back to the earth. You know, like, our food is so processed. We're so far removed from the farm. And, you know, envision that cow eating the grass in the sunshine somewhere, or that corn growing in the field and, you know, absorbing the water and the vitamin D from the sun, and really, like, completing the cycle for that food that you're about to put in your body. So I think there's a lot that you can do. I totally believe it. I think it's a huge part of TMS. And then there's people on these crazy restricted diets, myself included at one point. But I'm now choosing, I can eat sugar and all these things if I want, but I'm not really interested in, like, fully clearing the corn. I've had little tiny bits here and there and been fine, but I'm fine continuing as I am. And I don't, you know, I don't miss it so much because it's been part of, you know, I've eaten this way since I was about 17. And, yeah. So if that makes sense, I'm not interested in trying to reintroduce it and all that, because I'm happy with eating a really whole foods diet that I consider to be healthy.
So eating that way since you were 17. However, you were dealing with these migraines until you were 34. And so what I want to hear is, how did you come across, we can call it TMS, or we can call it healing, or we can call it chronic pain, or we can call it whatever. How did you find, okay, the stuff I've been trying hasn't been working, and now suddenly this, you know, this is the right path for me. How did you skate across that, or skate to that?
Yeah. 23-year journey. Well, like I said, first, yeah, how can I tell you that quickly? It's not possible, but what I can give you some snippets. So like I said, I really felt it was majority food related. And so I kind of, you know, ate this really healthy diet, and whole foods, you know, not like elimination diet. And, you know, I felt like I was, you know, quite healthy doing that. And then I also had like this, I felt like I needed a full-time job to do all the tick marks on the list of things to keep me migraine free. It was so much work, you know, like getting the proper sleep and this exercise and seeing this alternative practitioner and doing this meditation, this and this and this. And it was so much work, but I was feeling better and functioning, you know, with, let's say, you know, maybe 2 or 3 migraines a month. You know, that was significant compared to what they were.
Yeah.
And back in 2014, I was dating someone that I'd almost married, and we had a very bad breakup. And that person, he and I had been friends for 13 years prior to us dating. So it was like losing like a family member in a sense. It wasn't just like, you know, relationship end. And that's when my headaches came back to the intensity that they were when I was age 13. And I was like, oh my God, I can't function. I'm never gonna be able to work again. I know this is all emotionally related. You know, what do I do? I don't know what to do. Because at that point, everything that I'd ever tried that worked didn't work. You know, that diet, that making sure I did that sleep, going on the walk, whatever, you know, it was a laundry list. So I was just racking my brain. I read the Dr. Lisa Rankin's book, Mind Over Medicine, and I also read Dr. Sarno's book. But Dr. Sarno at that point kind of just related to my back pain. I didn't fully make the whole body connection at that point, to be fair. So it helped my back pain, but I wasn't really connecting it fully to the whole migraine experience. So Dr. Lisa Rankin had a holistic medicine conference in San Francisco that summer in July. And I went, and it was more so a conference for doctors and nurses and people in alternative medicine. So I was one of the only, you know, I'll say patients there, if you will. But I thought, because I read her book, but she didn't give enough clues on how to heal yourself, but I knew it was possible. So I'm like, I'm going to pay. I think it was like $2,000. It was something crazy, you know, for 3 days or something. I'm like, I'm going to pay this money and I'm going to go to this conference. And I'm going to learn what these practitioners that I've been paying thousands and thousands of dollars to help me heal. I got to learn whatever they're going to teach me there. So I went, it was an amazing conference. And I still get reminders all the time, you know, 6 years later. Yeah. All the time about little snippets that I learned there, because it didn't all sink in, you know, because it was so much. And then you were put into like a little pod of professionals, and then you had to read all these books and have homework. I think it was 3 months, 6 months, I don't remember, but every week or two we had to meet and talk about all of this stuff. And in that conference, she talked about, well, one of the practitioners talked about you can't heal your patients unless you have healed your own traumas. And this just like suddenly resonated with me. So over the course of like a week, I made a list of every trauma I've ever had, you know, starting with my birth, and realizing like what I had to heal. And I learned about somatic experiencing and working with a practitioner to help heal, get stuck energy out of the body. So that was like a pivotal turning point. And I thought, okay, this all makes sense. I can do this. This is what I need to do to go forward, because I need to rewire the brain so that I think about these things differently.
Right.
You know, and if you go to say a talk therapist, that might take 10 years or 20 years to do the same amount of work.
As the like, somatic literally. Stuff is what you're saying.
Yeah. You may never get to the core, you know, of, because you only, you know, they're not inside your brain, your subconscious, you know? So I worked with somebody that summer, and I found this amazing guy, and I was able to, so normally he spent like 3 months, and I just said, I need kind of like the fast track. can we do this like twice a week? He's like, are you sure you can handle this? This is, you know, you need to tell me if this is too much for you. I'm like, I think I'm fine. Yeah, let's just do it. And I had spoke with someone else prior, and she was like really soft and really, you know, like this could take a couple years or two. And I was just like, oh my God, like I got to get my life back. You know, I can't come to you every week, you know, 52 times a year. And maybe I made a little progress, you know, so... So I found the right person for me, which is definitely huge. And you know, but I also want to say, if you can't afford to seek out treatment like this, going out in nature is nature's the best therapist.
Right.
You know, you can do a lot of healing on your own just by going and sitting under a tree or going for a walk or dancing. You know, like dancing and singing and music is how ancient cultures used to heal.
Yeah.
And it's still how they help children heal. You know, like there's children that have, you know, that are, you know, just horrible experiences happen to them. I don't even want to get into the kinds of things, you know, but that's one way that they help children or kids in foster care, or, you know, there's so many things, and they can't necessarily use language, you know, say to a baby or a 2-year-old or 3-year-old, but they can do these kinds of things. So so there's a lot that can be done. So yeah, I went to this guy in Sonoma County and, you know, did somatic experiencing, and it was remarkable. Like I was able to let go of so many things, and for me, that's what I needed. After 23 years of this shit, I was done with it. You know, I'm like, I want to live my life, and I'm done. So, you know, maybe somebody only had a year of chronic pain, maybe they don't need something so intense, you know, and everyone's different.
So here's something that I'm hearing, a theme that
especially with the expletive, which, by the way, is okay on this podcast. No, it's great. So often there are, and the people that I know that have chronic ailments of any kind, there is a definite feeling of reservation and a definite feeling that I get from listening to them of, woe is me is very insensitive. That's not what I mean. But essentially just, you know, sort of giving up and just, you know, they have no power in this situation anymore. They can't stand or walk tall in anything. They feel like they're being defeated all the time, you know, that kind of thing. What you just described was a moment of taking back your power. I've had, you know, so many years of this shit, and I need to get my life back, and I will get my life back. I think in the beginning, when people have symptoms that start and they have this expectation that going to a doctor will heal them, and they have power the moment they walk into the doctor's office for the first time. And then when that's not the answer, it's a little bit less power. And then they see the next person, it's a little bit less power. You have 23 years of really having no power at all, right? And then somehow you manage to drop everything and say, no, I'm taking this back. So kudos to you on doing that. And so you get through, doing, which, by the way, I've talked about like somatic tracking on this show before. Can you just give us a 60 to 90 second synopsis of somatic experiencing as you went through it? What is it?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. And I will say, I think every practitioner does it a bit differently. I don't think there's necessarily one specific way, or they combine multiple therapies, you know? So, like they often use, like gestalt therapy to like ask. So you're usually lying on a table and the person, the practitioner, might be touching you or holding your head, but not in a very pretty gentle way, a little more like Reiki, you know, and they will be asking you questions like, what is your shoulder telling you, if they're holding your shoulder, you know, and then that might bring you back to a specific age, experience, person in your life. And then by them helping to bring out these experiences, they can help release them from various parts of your body. So they're generally combining a couple different modalities together in a safe, calm environment. You know, you feel very comfortable
So on one hand, it's you having to sit through and revisit whatever sort of uncomfortable situation or event or feeling or whatever it is that you had. But on the flip side of that, you're in a safe environment where you know that nothing will happen to you. Is that a pretty good?
Exactly. And by doing this, you're rewiring your brain. Like it's faster than just, say, writing about it in a journal.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's not that you won't get there that way as well, but it might take a lot longer.
Right. Right.
And I want to say too, like, my body from birth was stuck in fight or flight mode. So I was really like hypersensitive nervous system. And really reactful. So by working with this modality, I was able to calm my central nervous system and get rid of that anxiety and that worry and the what if and, you know, that victim mode kind of thinking.
So you go through this, the somatic experiencing, and it leads you out of the migraine pain. The curiosity I would have after having this for so long, the people in your life that knew you at the beginning and at the end of that, which it has to, I mean, probably just your family. Maybe there's some friends that you have, that you had since you were that young. I mean, I don't keep in constant contact with any friend that I had back when I was that young, but you know, there are a couple that I keep in, you know, once a year, there might be a message or something like that. What is their, thought? Because it almost sounds unbelievable to an outside person, right? You have something that lasts so long and then what, suddenly it's gone, you know? That, and that's where I think people sort of get the misguided or the misunderstanding that, you know, they were making it up or it wasn't all that serious to begin with, because something that lasts so long couldn't possibly go away that fast. So what was some of the reaction of the people that you knew that saw you at the beginning, the worst and the end?
Well, I know many people still that are in my life, including my, you know, of course, my family that knew me as this person with migraine and now not. And it's hard because everyone knows you as the sick person. You know, that is who you are. You are the person with migraine imprinted on your head, you know, and they're also participating in this whole, you know, experience really by how they speak to you about it. And, you know, just by asking, oh, how do you feel today? Do you have a headache? Like, if you don't have a headache, that can actually start one.
Yep.
You know, so it's really hard as you start to get better to help to understand how to manage that, those negative words and energy. But at the same time, as you're getting better, you're becoming more positive and you're changing. So as you change, others change. But like, you might have to tell people to maybe not ask how you're feeling, and you'll tell them. You know, even my mom at this point will still ask me, oh, how are your headaches? And it, I should probably always ask, but, you know, it, inside it infuriates me, because I haven't really had that many headaches in the last, you know, 6 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. Does that answer your question, Eddie? I'm not certain.
No, it does. And so, I told you before we started rolling that we go to the top of the hour. I know you've got some other things to do. Do you have 5 or 6 more minutes to kind of close?
I do.
Okay, good, good. So, now, you know, and I mentioned it at the beginning when we first started rolling, but your life has taken this tremendous trajectory. And one of the things I'm most curious about is, you had said, I had this 23-year experience with chronic pain. And essentially when that ended, I decided I need to go do something else, which is pretty drastic, which led you to London and also completely changed careers. So what are you doing now?
Yeah, well, I was running a cooking school until December. And that was an amazing experience. And what that was a dream of mine. I should say, you know, yeah, I said before that my dream was to go to Italy and study gastronomy. So I did that. And then I felt like I got this new lease on life after I was able to get rid of these headaches. You know, I was like, okay, life is short. I want to do everything that I want to do. So that's not to say there weren't challenges. It's not like every day is perfect and a piece of cake, but so yeah, I was running a cooking school, and I've decided to create a virtual business, mindbodykitchens.com. And one of the virtual classes I'm offering is a course for people who are experiencing migraines or chronic pain, who want to, you know, look at how they can heal their life. And, you know, I'm going to share everything that I know, and, you know, help people that really are struggling, because I know it's real. It's crazy to think that, like, I made myself that sick, you know, but I also made myself better, which is pretty remarkable. And I know if I can do it, anyone can do it. So yeah, I'm just kind of delving into the whole virtual online world and learning as I go.
And so, I mean, what's the essence of what it is you're, because I'm curious on the, you know, the, because cooking to me is one thing, mind body kitchens is certainly another. And so what is the essence of the business?
Yeah, well, the essence of the business is, I guess, sharing my love and passion and creativity for food and our food system, and, you know, wanting to help people who are interested in this, in this journey. You know, I feel like we're all on this planet here. We have a purpose, and my purpose is to connect other people together who want to heal. And I feel like one modality of that is with food. It's not the only modality to healing.
Yeah.
But it's one trajectory, And that's why I called it Mind Body Kitchens. I didn't want to call it Mind Body Spirit Kitchens. That was just too much. But, but you know, it's fascinating, really. Once you get into this, you know, healing world, just like how much you can learn every single day. And, you know, I think a huge part of healing is finding joyful moments, being creative. And the kitchen is the perfect place. You have to eat. You know, most people eat 3 times a day at least. And you get to have this sensory experience where you're touching, seeing, smelling, tasting, and hearing the food you're cooking. And, you know, the average person is so far removed from that, you know, buying food in packages and boxes. And it's really good for the soul to kind of take a step back, think about food like the way your grandparents might have thinking about food, and really just understanding that whole connection to our food system, and you know, putting intention into what you're doing, and realizing that food is medicine. You know, I think that's the essence of it. Food is medicine, and anything could be medicine, really. It's just how you're looking at it.
Yeah. Lindsay, this has been a lot of fun, and it's nice getting a different perspective. I think that, I mean, I'd have to go back and listen to every interview I've done, but I think that 23 years breaks the record for everybody
that I've had
on the pod. So congratulations on your record setting performance.
Oh goodness.
Where can people, you know, if they listen to this, and they say, oh, I really like what she's about. You know, I'd love to get in touch with her. I want to hear more, you know, that kind of thing. Where can people find you?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm on Instagram. It's Mind Body Kitchens. Make sure you add the S because there's others. So Mind Body Kitchens with an S, and mindbodykitchens.com is my website. You can find me on there, email me, send me a message on Instagram. I would love to connect. I'm also on Facebook, but that doesn't seem to be too active over Instagram. And I'm going to be putting out my first recorded video today YouTube. So things are progressing.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love the video content. I wish that I could get a little bit more committed to it, but it's a tough endeavor, but it's awesome. So I'll check that out for sure. And I'll put the links to this stuff in the show notes. But Lindsay, thank you so much for your time. And thanks for jumping on with us for about an hour.
You're most welcome. Well, thank you for inviting me. It was a lot of fun to chat with you. I look forward to staying in touch.